Welcome now to the midday. I'm Norman Gilliland once again in our Buck studio for some live music, and it's going to be provided by Isabella Wu, making her third visit here. The first one was in the context of a WISO, Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra's ensemble, right?
Yes.
And then it's been almost a year now since you came back and played solo. How time flies. What have you been doing in that year? By the way, welcome back.
Oh, nice to be here today. This year I've been doing some concerti, going back to the Rachmaninoff First Concerto and learning the second and third movements, so learning the entire piece. I've also been doing some solo work, so that's been quite fun.
More competitions since the Final Forte?
Well, not really. I think the Final Forte was my last one, and now I'm just
That was the 2015 Final Forte, and you were one of those Final Four. So congratulations on that, too.
Thank you.
And we'll have you come back sometime and play the violin and have some fun playing violin and piano, at the same time through the magic of radio.
Yeah.
Well, you are going to be starting with an entire sonata by Beethoven.
Yes.
And that's going to probably take us to about 12:35. We'll get to the quiz question at that point. Certainly worth the delay for this Tempest Sonata. Did you have any insight when you're working on this sonata, Isabella, as to why Beethoven called it the Tempest?
Well, Beethoven at this time, around 1802, began to accept that he was actually going deaf. He writes about this in his Heiligenstadt Testament to his brothers.
The Heiligenstadt Testament.
Yeah. And this piece is sort of reflective of his acceptance of his deafness, but it also portrays some of his glorious work. More of his inner voice came out while his outer hearing deteriorated. And this piece is mainly reminiscent of a violent storm, but punctuated by several calm, peaceful moments. And I think that's why he called it The Tempest.
Sounds like Beethoven, all right.
Yeah.
Stormy composer. At least he has that reputation in his personal life as well as many of his musical works. Well, talk us through, again, we're going to be hearing the whole sonata uninterrupted, but talk us through the three movements of it.
Well, the entire sonata is based off of three motifs. There are three. They all come out in the first six measures of the first movement. The first movement is more kind of inner tumult, sort of turbulous, a little disturbed, but also some of those brief moments I talked about. The second movement is much slower, quieter, but also gives a little bit of the inner voice to more of like the heavens. And the third is, I consider, more of his acceptance of his deafness. Even though he's going deaf, there is some glorious movements in this third movement. And yes.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, so here it is. It's the Opus 31, number 2, the Tempest Sonata by Beethoven. The pianist is Isabella Wu. at which the audience stands up and applauds. The Tempest Piano Sonata, Opus 31, Number 2, by Beethoven, played live in our Buck studio and just now, by Isabella Wu. And have you finished your sophomore year in high school yet?
I finished my junior year,
okay.
And we'll
so
be
you're really getting up there.
Yeah.
At Memorial.
Yes.
In Madison. So you're already to that point where you're starting to think about...
college.
Yes.
Yes.
What do you think about college?
I think college is a little bit scary, but exciting. Yes. Uh-huh. Music will definitely be part of my college experience, whether as a single major or a double major, but it will be there somewhere.
Are you thinking of going to specifically a music school or just a school that has a great music program?
I'm not quite sure yet. I mean, college is still 2 years off. I'm still thinking about it, but I'll make my decision soon, hopefully.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to hearing how that goes. I wanted to ask about the Beethoven before we move on. Is there a favorite movement of those three for you?
I like the first.
Do you?
Most, yes. I think it has more interesting variations compared to the second or third. Very fiery parts, but also very calm areas.
Now, you have used a phrase, paralysis by analysis, when approaching music. What does that amount to?
Excuse me?
Paralysis by analysis. Can you overanalyze a piece of music before you try to play it?
I believe it's possible. I think some of the theory behind the music helps, definitely, but I do believe it is sometimes possible.
To overthink it going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about Rachmaninoff, there was a lot of thinking done about his first piano concerto, not
yes.
all of it good back in the day. It's his Opus 1, too, which is kind of interesting to have such a monumental work be your first published piece.
Yes.
It's a little bit out of the way. Of course, the second piano concerto has all the great hit tunes
mm-hmm.
in it.
Yes.
And everybody who knows Rachmaninoff at all knows that one, but not this first piano concerto. Do you have any sense of why the second is so much more popular, so much better known than the first, other than the occasional hit tune?
Well, when he originally premiered it in America, it was not actually given as much applause as he would like. He complained about it in a letter. He didn't understand why the audience didn't like it, because he thought the first piano concerto was very good now. I'm not quite sure why they didn't like it. I do agree, you know, it's not quite as catchy as the second, you know. Audiences sometimes like, you know, one set of melody and
right.
just building upon it, whereas the first piano concerto is built on various themes, which might have disconcerted the audience a little bit. But I love the first piano concerto most of all.
And the second movement that you're going to play is quite brief.
Yes, it is 74 measures long.
74 measures, which adds
yes.
up to all of about 5 minutes or so in
yes.
radio terms. And what's in this second movement is usually you'd expect a second movement to be the most lyrical.
Yeah, so the second movement is built off of one theme. And then following that one theme, there are two variations built on it, one after another. It requires a great deal of piano playing. I think that only the orchestra plays the introduction, and then there is a two-measure rest in the piano part, but it is mostly piano throughout.
So you're saying we don't really need the orchestra for this?
Well, I don't have a second piano here with me today. Definitely, I mean, the orchestra part is important, but it's more able to bring out its own goodness in its own line compared to the first or third.
So here's the second movement of the first piano concerto by Sergei Rachmaninoff.
Thank you.
Second movement of the first piano concerto of Rachmaninoff sounds, well, certainly rhapsodic, but at times a little like Debussy.
Yes.
Those harmonies there, some of them unexpected. How's your, speaking of the piano as a percussion instrument, how's your percussion career progressing, Isabella?
My percussion career has mostly deteriorated. Many instruments.
what were you playing?
Just percussion at school, yes, in the band.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
Was it fun?
Yes, definitely. That's why I did it.
Just not a career trajectory.
No, not a career.
Well, you have, speaking of things that tend to be rhapsodic, some list on your program here today also. One of those wonderful Transcendental Etudes, a total of 24, inspired by Paganini, I think, originally.
Yes. Well, an interesting thing about this set of etudes is Liszt actually wrote the first set when he was 13 or 15, when he was very young. About 11 years later, he revised them to complete his grand studies, which were monstrously difficult etudes. 13 years after that, he actually simplified them, took out any stretches larger than a tenth, which makes me wonder what this piece might be if, you know, I played the second version instead.
Can you play tenths?
I can play tenths. I can't play anything bigger than that, and I can't play tenths very quickly either.
A little bit of a, have to work up to it a little bit. But yeah, Liszt was constantly tinkering with the things that he wrote.
Yes.
And so there are various forms of a lot of them. What is going on in the Transcendental Etude number 10 in F minor? An etude implies a study of some kind.
Yes. Well, this one is very passionate. It comes out very feisty at first, very tumultuous. Later on, it gives way to more melodic singing lines, but overall, it's still pretty technical, even though it's considered not one of the most technical.
Technical enough.
Yes.
Number 10. Bravo. I would say that was plenty technical, number 10 of the Transcendental Etudes of Liszt. And I would just say that if there were any thing in particular going on there, it's that you really have to voice that right hand when you get into the stratosphere and against the pounding of the left, pounding and the prowling of the left.
Yeah.
That is quite a, I was going to say a handful, but it's two hands full and maybe even three at times. Well, Isabella, it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to your next visit. And before we depart, what was the piece you played at the Madison Area Music Awards? Do you remember?
Madison Area, excuse me?
There was a piece you played.
Yes, that was the Liszt Transcendental Etude No. 10.
I kind of suspected that.
Yes.
I'm told that it really brought the crowd to its feet.
Oh, well, thank you.
And so it should have. And thanks again. We'll look forward to your next visit.